The Unshackled Waves, episode 249.
Broadcasting from Melbourne, Australia, this is The Unshackled Waves with Tim Wills, brought to you by TheUnshackled.net.
Hello everyone, welcome to another Live Waves episode. In the news this week has been the protest in Hong Kong against the extradition bill, which could see its citizens subjected to the Chinese legal system. The Social Justice AFL took things too far this week with their behavioural awareness officers policing fans' behaviour. We saw Adani protesters in Brisbane decide to be even more annoying by gluing themselves to roads. And in the state of Victoria, voluntary euthanasia has come into effect today, and they are now proposing laws to introduce gender-fluid birth certificates. So to discuss this week's news again on a Wednesday night, I am joined by the senior editor of The Unshackled, Damien Ferry. Welcome again.
Thanks for having me, Tim.
Now we'll start with what's been happening in Hong Kong, where there's this extradition bill which could see Hong Kong residents. Currently, Hong Kong is a special administrative region of the People's Republic of China, could see their citizens subjected to the Chinese legal system, which is obviously a communist dictatorship. And so there's been huge protests there, around about 6 days worth of up to 2 million people. They're pretty outraged there. And we've seen the Hong Kong chief executive, Carrie Lam, who's been seen as pro-Jinping. She wasn't going to back down on the bill, but with all the protests, she has now.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, this is something that needs to be sorted out very soon rather than later. It seems to me that there are many people out there that do see Hong Kong as a separate entity. And then, of course, there is many people that see it as part of China. And I think that's something that needs to be sorted because they're always going to have conflicts of a sort. And this is just another matter of a very long process that we've seen over the very many years. And when it comes to the actual situation, such as the extradition bill that we're in discussion with now, most people that I have seen on social media and basically talking about the topic have supported the protesters and have also rallied, for instance, for sanctions against China for other countries abroad to get involved and to back the protesters and show solidarity and support for them. Personally, myself, though, as a bit of an isolationist, I just don't think we should get involved in things that have nothing to do with us. I don't think anything good could come from it. And although I'm not a fan of China and I really, you know, I have no liking for China at all, I just don't think it's our business to get involved in these sort of affairs. I just don't really see anything that is to our benefit. I just don't see it at all.
Well, I think, and I didn't get to talk about it last week on the Uncuckables because I changed over and Steele and Maddie came on. My opinion is that I think this has been a good pushback against the president of China, Xi Jinping, and the Chinese Communist government. I mean, they haven't been able to basically roll this small part of what has become part of their empire. So I think that it's a setback for China. If they can't control their own territory, then it's obviously going to be very difficult if they want to get more aggressive in the South China Sea and in trade. And it's managed to put into the spotlight that the Chinese government is not a friend of human rights, the rule of law. And so I definitely think that this is a welcome development and a good smackdown of the Chinese government.
Well, I do like to see the Chinese, the government, the communist government, of course, getting a setback here, and it is something that is good, definitely in regards to a global context. The only thing is, just on a moral-based value, is that I just don't think that countries outside of the region and area really have that sort of grounds where they can legitimately get involved in something that really has nothing to do with them. I do realise that it is a good thing to see the Chinese get setbacks like this, and I mean, it is great to see a communist government get further weakened. I think that there could be consequences down the track, and we just have to be very careful here. Not that I really take any threats or any serious concerns. I don't think she will be greatly affected, but I just think taking the neo kind of strategy doesn't always seem to work for us. I mean, we've had a lot of setbacks in the Middle East in the past where we've tried to get involved in other people's affairs and change things, and it's only ended up being mishaps and a lot of misfortune there. So I'm just a bit wary, that's all.
Well, I'll give a bit of background. So the British voluntarily handed over Hong Kong to the Chinese when their lease expired in 1997, but the deal was that they got to keep the British democratic and rule of law system until 2047. So it's sort of a bit like the inevitable has been delayed.
Well, the time will be ticking then, won't it? I mean, even though the Chinese are obviously trying to stamp their ground in this, but, I mean, what happens after 2047 then? So even though they basically put a time frame on it, so when the date ends, then the Chinese will be able to have their way regardless. That's if they haven't done something illegal or that goes against this in the first place before then, which looks very highly likely since then. They really seem to be trying to do everything they can to stop the Hong Kong citizens from gaining any sort of authority or any sense of independence in the future.
Yeah, and it's like I said, it's sort of delayed the inevitable, but there sort of is hope that not China is not going to become this all-consuming, powerful, one party and now one leader dictatorship.
Yeah, and I mean, the amount of damage that China has done worldwide, I mean, we're still seeing the effects, especially when it comes to the amount of business closures that we've seen in first world countries due to Chinese being able to provide a cheaper product. A lot of people love the fact that we have a free trade agreement with them, and obviously like that sort of being able to get inferior products for cheaper price. Obviously, it's part of the free market that we're currently in. But at the same time, it does have a lot of effects, especially to workers and so forth, that, I mean, our manufacturing industries and industries of all sorts have all been demolished because it just a lot of businesses don't see it as profitable to be able to operate in countries such as Australia, and rather go to countries such as China where things are being able to run cheap, and they have been doing that for a while now. So it will be very interesting to see how these protests turn out, what the end result is, and down the track, obviously, the long-term kind of advantage or disadvantage from this as well, economically and also on the global scene.
Well, let's go back to Australia, and we're going to talk about sport for a bit, because the AFL has been in the news this week, because what was spotted on the weekend at games at Marvel Stadium was what was called behavioural awareness officers, which everyone thought was an Orwellian term, and there was all this footage from the matches of the security staff telling off fans who were, you know, shouting too loudly, which goes on every week at the football. If you've ever been to one, even though it's a Melbourne game, it's all around the country now, and this was seen as a real affront to the fans, because the passion of the fans is what drives AFL, and like And it began the week before when a fan was ejected for calling a umpire a bald-headed flog, which is, well, maybe bald is, well, it's picking on his appearance, but flog, in my opinion, that's a non-discriminatory insult. You can call anybody a flog, like anybody can be a flog, but he got turfed out because of that. And so this had been brewing for a week that, you know, the fans were feeling like they were being targeted, police, that, you know, they weren't allowed to be themselves. And this is what happened at Marvel Stadium on the weekend, which is in Melbourne. It's the Docklands Stadium. And so the AFL chief, Gillon McLachlan, he did a press conference on Tuesday where he's sort of like, you know, we're not at war with the fans. There's been no change in policy. We'll obviously work with the stadiums and the police to make sure that we get the balance right. And former Victorian Premier Jeff Kennett and current Hawthorn Club president made the point that the AFL has seen itself as the arbiter of social behaviour. I mean, they support, you know, initiatives such as same-sex marriage and Indigenous recognition. You know, they want a virtue signal on everything, and now they're, you know, telling people how to behave at their football game. It's sort of like the last straw for many of their fans, and so now there's been this massive backlash.
Yeah, and I hope they do get further backlash over this, because it's disgusting behaviour. There's nothing more that people hate than when sports stop doing what they do best and then start going political and focusing on things that have nothing to do with them whatsoever. People absolutely hate it, and I think it's right there in your face, and people see it for what it is. When it comes to this particular situation here, the thing that really annoys me is that, for some reason, like you mentioned, the word flog is not directed to any particular ethnicity or group of person, yet it seems that whenever a term is used in a sports stadium, that they automatically say that it was a racist attack, kind of like with Adam Goods and the monkey comment, when, I mean, really, calling someone a monkey doesn't have to be derogatory towards a particular ethnicity at all anyway, and I mean, the same as a flog. And when they do come out and say that it was directed because of his ethnicity, they're basically damaging or putting down that particular ethnic group by saying that that's where the word is connected to, really knowing that they are. They think that they're doing the right thing by standing by them, but they're actually doing more damage than good in that respect. And when it comes to the actual sports, I mean, people go to stadiums because they want to cheer. They want to get involved and be part of the action. I think that if people wanted to not be loud and not get involved, and they would just watch it on their TVs at home, the whole idea about going to a stadium is to be loud and get involved and play a part, you know, be part of this game. And if they want to clamp down on this sort of activity, they're going to really see a decrease in sales in the future, I think. And the behavioural awareness officers, just that term is really scary, I think. And it kind of reminds me of many movies out there that portray this Orwellian sort of future, especially a movie like Demolition Man, for instance, if anyone's seen it, a classic from the 90s, and it basically has this futuristic type of environment where people are actually fined for swearing, and a machine actually beeps and says you've been charged a violation for that word. So, I mean, this is the kind of thing. It seems like it's really that they're really pushing this nanny state kind of push and shove to the ordinary man, ordinary woman, and I think people have just had enough of it. I think it's disgusting. It's very, very scary having such titles like a behavioural awareness officer. I mean, it's pretty crazy.
And Jeff Kennett also made the comment that a lot of these security officials looked like new arrivals to Australia, and therefore they didn't understand the culture of AFL. They just saw people arcing up and was like, oh, we can't have that. Now, he was slapped down by the AFL CEO, Gillon McLachlan, said, oh, you know, you shouldn't judge people based on their appearance, but their ability. But he wasn't wrong that does play a part. And you have to remember that a lot of security personnel, they like to, you know, throw their weight around, made it look like they're in charge. And so that's obviously going to play a part as well. They're looking for something to do.
Yeah, of course. I mean, I don't think that there was anything in it. They're trying to make a situation out of nothing. And likewise, I think a lot of people are just going to get sick of this and move on. And I think they're going to lose out of it, really. They're trying to push the majority of their fans away just to focus on some sort of minority status agenda. And it just won't do them any good. I don't think many people... either within the LGBT community, either within the, particular ethnicities that they're catering for. I mean, that only is a very minute population in Australia, and the majority aren't members of those minority groups. So really, they're focusing their attention on such people, and all the majority of the citizens are going to think, well, what's going on here? I mean, it's just... they just don't like seeing this sort of activity, really. They just want to watch the game, have a good time, and keep it simple.
And you mentioned the insult against Adam Goods, which triggered, because that's what sort of, when he decided to become a professional victim, he was given the Australian of the Year and started lecture everyone on, you know, white privilege and Australia's got a dark history. And that's when fans started to boo him at matches. And the AFL came out last week, because there was a documentary on the whole thing, saying, oh, we're really sorry about that. We should have done more. And some people are wondering, is the AFL's overzealous policing of fans a response to that as well? Because that's another thing that they appeared to crack down on, these officers, people, you know, booing and, you know, yelling too loudly.
Yeah, I really cringed when I saw that. I thought it was ridiculous that the AFL had come out and made this such an apology to what happened in the past and it shouldn't have happened. I mean, fans should be able to get involved and boo the opposition and, you know, curse and do say whatever they wanted to. That's a whole part of getting involved and really digging into the opposition. People don't have the intention to really want to do people harm on the pitch or on the field. They're not like that. I mean, they're just simply... That's part of getting within the entertainment of what it is, of watching a game, you know? I mean, a lot of people, if they were at home, they'll be yelling stuff at the TV, exactly the same sort of thing. I just... The amount of virtue signalling that they are doing, all because it's... somebody of a minority group, it's just unbelievable. And like I said before, I think people are just going to start turning off and they're going to lose out of it, really. The game has nothing to do with politics. They shouldn't get involved in politics. It's not the AFL's responsibility to tell fans how to act, to tell how, you know, what's right, what's wrong. They just simply have to do their jobs and leave everything else alone as is. The players should just get on with it and, you know, just let it run off the, you know, like water off the back sort of thing, you know, just not worry about any insults that are thrown their way. Just get over it and that's it, you know. I mean, sticks and stones, you know, like just get on with the game and stop whinging about things.
And Gillon McLachlan said that he didn't like the behavioural officers and they will most likely go. And there was even, this was down in Tasmania, where a security guard, he wanted to get involved in an on-field dispute. And like the photo saw the umpire saying, no, this is not your job. And this is what goes to what I was saying before, that, you know, these security officers, they're so, are looking for, you know, something to justify their thing, that they actually want to be part, like, that's not done anywhere in the world.
That's right. I mean, everyone has a job to do, and if everybody stuck to the job and the role that they have, then there would be a lot less issues, and people can get on with doing what they're supposed to be doing.
Now, we saw the Adani coal mine in central Queensland approved last week, finally. The Queensland Labor government, they tried to delay it for as long as possible using the black-throated finch as an excuse. But obviously in the federal election, with Labor losing two seats, they only hold six out of 30, which is... Well, it's a fifth of the seats, and the Senate results just came out. Labor only got one senator. The Queensland Palaszczuk government, they were basically forced to approve it. Apparently, the environment minister in Queensland, she told people that she cried when she had to approve it out of political necessity. So they were dragged kicking and screaming to this approval, and... It's finally going ahead, but of course the Green Left, they're not going to take no for an answer. They're going to, well, they've advocated civil disobedience. They're going to basically chain themselves to things, put themselves in front of bulldozers, do anything. And in Brisbane yesterday, two activists from... A group, Extinction Rebellion. As the name says, they think we're all going to go extinct from climate change. The two of their activists glued themselves to a busy crossing in Queen Street in Brisbane, basically inconveniencing all the people trying to get to work or going to different places. And They want governments to declare a climate emergency like they did in wartime.
Well, I think it's an absolute disgrace that these two activists have gotten involved and basically caused such a disruption in the CBD in traffic and caused such a scene and chaos. I mean, the government really needs to get a hold of people like this and not let them get away with it, you know? I mean, it seems to me that many times that it's happened in the past that they've really just gotten a slap on the wrist with this. And this is illegal protesting because they aren't even organising this because obviously if they had, the police wouldn't allow them to do such ridiculous things. They would have closed roads off and actually made it possible for... Vehicles to get around in the city without any disruption. So these people have gone about about what they wanted to do. They haven't cared about any laws in place, any people that have needed to access the roads. And I think it's time that the government really needs to put tough penalties, because if they don't, then they're going to keep on doing it. Just like when they invade farms and have done that, and the government were forced to step something about it, they needed to also do something about when they are causing delays and disruptions and doing these sort of stunts. This group or whatever, this rebellious group declared the climate emergency and have said that we're going to become extinct and everything. I mean, we've heard all this before. They've been saying this since the 70s, remarkably, and yet we're still here. If we were to believe Al Gore, I mean, he said it was supposed to be underwater and, you know, ice age and all that. Many years ago, we were supposed to have gone through all this and we're still here. And I mean, there's a lot of islands even that are growing in size rather than sinking. So the facts are there, but obviously they're going to keep on pushing their agenda. And I think people just really need to do their research and really get amongst the facts here, because it's very dangerous, this kind of situation, what they're pushing. And it's obviously causing much disruption and dismay to the public.
Yeah, they're giving the vegans a run for their money about being the most annoying activists. I mean, like you mentioned, you know, they're the ones that invade farms, steal livestock, terrorize farmers. And there was the protest that they held in Melbourne, where they blocked their busy intersection at Flinders Street Station next to Swanson Street, and police had to physically remove them. In this situation, it wasn't just the police that were involved. The paramedics had to be in attendance as well to make sure that they got unstuck safely. So basically required two different emergency services. And They feel entitled to do this because they're morally right, and it's like, well, you haven't listened to us the polite way, so we're going to inconvenience you to punish you. And like, it just pisses people off more. Like, I remember after the vegan protest, everyone's like, well, I'm going to have a steak dinner or a burger to out of spite. I mean, I think maybe you know, keep your lights on throughout the whole night just to piss off these climate protesters.
Well, I hope that they do get a backlash over this. And the funny thing about it is that they really, a lot of them don't even practice what they preach. If you were to go to their homes, most of them wouldn't even have any solar panels on their roof. They all drive non-electric vehicles and all the rest, just very similar to Stegall in the case of the Warringah seat, that Tony Abbott actually made the point about... you know, her not being able to fulfill her values and to abide by them, and then she had to make excuses for herself. But I know a lot of these people that have these beliefs, that have these views, the vegans and the climate change protesters and all that, and these people here don't live the life that they are preaching to other people for them to live. I mean, they're forcing us to partake in these kind of actions, yet they're not doing it themselves. Apart from that, I just think not only annoying, but I mean, it's based on lies and fabrication, what they are protesting about. And the people that are funding this are rich billionaires, you know? I mean, these are the people that are supposed to be rebelling against the system, yet it's the system that is behind and supporting and promoting this agenda. All of the media is behind it, the politicians are behind it, the bankers, the governments, everyone is behind it. And if you're not, you're outcasted. I mean, the people that are against climate change, I mean, they're the real activists, they're the real rebels against the system, because as soon as you display that type of view, then you're demonized for it. I mean, you're shut down. So that should tell you who's on the side of truth and who isn't, just by that alone. I think one thing that you have to hand it to them is, apart from going out of their way to obviously break laws and do the wrong thing, but one thing that is lacking on the right side of politics is that the left are so passionate for what they believe in. Even though it's fake, even though it's false and fabricated and all the rest of it, they will fight to utter death just to get their message across, put themselves in harm's way. I mean, I've never seen people on the right do these things. And I mean, I'm not advocating for, you know, anti-abortion, pro-life people to, you know, stick themselves on the roads and all of that. I mean, that would be ridiculous. But if people on the right started having more passion and actively went out there and put their views out there and had mass rallies and really got out there, I think we would be able to have a lot more power on the actual political sphere, on the spectrum. And these people are very loud, but they are minorities. They are very, very small in numbers, but because they are loud, they get their way and they are able to get politicians to push laws and to push agendas. And I think on the right side of politics, this is what's needed amongst many of the grassroots.
And I should also mention that another group that has done this is the Indigenous protesters. They blocked traffic in the Melbourne CBD to protest the closure of remote Indigenous communities, again to say, well, you'll know what it's like to have your community shut down. Like they're coming from a position of they basically want to shame the public to agree with them, and bully as well, and it's just not going to work with people. It's like I said, like they're just going to like, who are these clowns there, like inconvenience me, making a fool of themselves. Like the mainstream media, of course, eat it up, saying, oh, you know, look at these noble, you know, protesters, and that's sort of what sets this circle in motion. They think, yeah, we're getting filmed by, you know, like Channel 7, the ABC, where we're making a difference, but The reality is that you lost the election on the Adani issue. Bob Brown had that convoy that went from Hobart all the way up to central Queensland, and in central Queensland, in Claremont, the closest town to mine, they told them to go away. We're not serving you. You want to take jobs away from the local community. So they've lost the argument. The people voted against them, yet it does not compute. It's no, like, you know, we've got to think of more insane ways.
That's right. I actually, I absolutely loved seeing that from the locals when they did that. I thought it was a great statement, and it really embarrassed the left so much, I think. I have to learn from the election, you know? And the thing that really frustrates me is that people on the left have come out and their excuse is we didn't deliver the message well enough. So they're not even actually saying that their message was wrong. They're saying that they were in the right, but they just weren't able to brainwash the public well enough for them to understand and to believe them to be right. So they're still not learning from their mistakes. They have to learn that they're not winning over the working class. The working class are seeing the people on the left, the Labor and the Greens, and they're saying these people don't represent us. They haven't represented them for a long time. And unfortunately, there's a lot of rusted on Labor voters, especially older people that don't learn and don't actually really understand or pay attention to politics and continue to vote for them. But if we're talking about how things are going to be down the line in the future, so give it 20 years, the older people are gone, then what? Then most people that are going to be voting are actually going to be aware of every issue and thing that is happening on the political stage, and they won't be able to do those sort of things anymore. I mean, if they want working class votes, they have to have working class policies. And to be against mines and to be having a pro-green agenda, every time that the Labor Party go down this road, they lose. The Greens obviously have their, you know, 10% support, and that's not going to go anywhere. For now, at least. But at the end of the day, the Labor Party has gone down the hill because workers are turning against them. They're not representing what they're supposed to. And the people that they cite, whether it be Shifley or whether it be Curtin or any of the other guys that used to be in the job many, many years, decades back, they're going to be looking at the party if they were here today, and they'll be thinking, what the hell is going on right now? I mean, this is not the party that it's supposed to be. This party is a bunch of loons, extremists. They never had progressive, or regressive, I should say, agendas like this. And to be against miners in support of inner city yuppies that, wanted everybody else out to live, and generally are the class of society as well. So definitely, and we even saw, not only that, but in the election result, that the working class areas voted against them, yet the areas that had a an affluent upper class region or seat, I could say, actually swung to the Labor Party. So that's definitely saying that elements within society are shifting, and I think people have to take note of this. Either you represent who you're saying you're going to represent, or just forget about it and move on and represent somebody else and actually be right out front about it and not lie and be honest about it.
And now we'll give an update on Israel Folau's. He was in the news again this week. He's taking Rugby Australia to the Fair Work Commission, citing religious discrimination over their decision to terminate his playing contract worth $4 million over his sinner's Instagram post. Now, footage was released this week on a sermon he gave at his church, where he was paraphrased as saying that the LGBT lifestyle, its spread is what the devil is trying to do to instill into the government, into this world, into society, and it's slowly happening. And he also mentioned transgenderism, saying today's youth are allowing young kids in primary school to change their gender if they want by taking away the permission of the parents. And so this has sort of been used to sort of paint him more as an extremist and, you know, not worthy of protection for his religious belief.
Well, I mean, like most Christians, you'd think he's just basically practicing his religion in the way. I mean, this was a sermon that was in, obviously, indoors. It wasn't even said in public as such. It was said in his church. And he has every right to say it, and I don't care what anybody has to say about it. If they don't like it, then don't go to his sermon. I mean, it's that simple. There's a lot of people that say things that I don't like, and I don't attend those particular meetings or conferences or whatever they want to call them. It's just quite simple, really. I don't think he's basically done anything out of the ordinary. I mean, if anyone actually bother to read the Bible, he's basically just citing Christian staple Christian belief, you know. What actually bothers me and what actually I think is I wouldn't call it a surprise as such, because we're well aware of how the Gosford Anglican Church is in relation to where they stand on the issues. But when they came out and actually had a sign saying that Folau is wrong, don't listen to him, it makes you think when they're praising the LGBT community and going against someone like Folau that is basically reciting the biblical text, then how Christian can this Anglican church in Gosford and Rod Bauer be? I mean, it's an absolute front. I mean, I don't care what Rod Bauer believes, but for him to call himself a reverend and to say, you know, being in control of a church and preach to be some sort of a Christian, yet he's going against core Christian philosophy here and praising people that the Bible condemns. Like, I mean, I don't really care what his beliefs are, but he's an absolute liar, a fraud, and most people know how he's like. Obviously, there are going to be people on the left that jump up and down and just, you know, use it as a situation of oh, well, look, this guy is a Christian and can have that kind of ideology, so why is Folau any different? Well, I would actually say the opposite and say, well, Folau and most churches and Christians would that are actually practicing and aren't just, you know, people that label themselves as such for whatever sort of agendas, they would have the opposite view. So why is it that the Anglican Church then in Gosford goes against the fray and states something that just isn't biblical? I think that's really the question that we should be talking about here.
Well, Folau's already been marginalised politically. I mean, Scott Morrison, he last year defended Folau, said he was a good Christian, but this year said that his Instagram post was grossly insensitive, and he's not going to enact Folau's law, which has been advocated by Erica Betts and Barnaby Joyce, which would basically mean that in employment contracts you can't limit a person's religious expression. So even though he's got the usual sort of conservatives on his side, it's not going to go anywhere. Even though Scott Morrison said that he wanted to introduce a Religious Discrimination Act, that sort of seems to have been shelved on the back burner. He hasn't spoken about it at all.
Yeah, just like the religious freedoms that they were really going to go hard in, and then they, you know, delayed it for so long. It seems to be a non-priority for this government, unfortunately, and I think a lot of people expect more from them, because people expected that the Liberals would be a safer option of the two major parties when it came to religious freedoms. But unfortunately, I think a lot of people are disappointed because they aren't really acting in the best interests of those people and of people of faith. And I mean, Scott Morrison being someone that is that comes across and seems to be very, very devout should be a champion of these kind of laws and of these freedoms. Yet it doesn't seem like he's doing much, which is quite a shame and disappointment. And I mean, people kind of think it's odd that that's the case. Definitely some agendas at play, or there's other people or other things that he's thinking that may cause some sort of negative reaction. I don't know why, because personally, I think that when the Liberals go very conservative socially, that actually perform very, very well electorally, as we've seen in the past with Howard and Abbott, for instance, in slide victories. And when they go soft and go small L Liberal, they tend to do very bad electorally. So even though it may affect a couple of seats or, you know, some Liberal supporters, so to speak, in the inner cities, I think as a whole, I think the majority of the population that are part of the Liberals or that would be in Liberal seats would actually be quite supportive of taking a very strong approach when it comes to religious freedoms.
Now, another development this week in Australian politics was Corey Bernardi. He was asked whether he'd consider rejoining the Liberal Party, and he left the door open to it. And various Liberal politicians have been asked, would you welcome him back? And they're like, oh yeah, we'd like an extra vote. I will have those conversations. And if Corey does rejoin the Liberal Party, it'll pretty much symbolise that Australian Conservatives as a project has been a failure, and that it's going to be, like, if they do accept him back the Liberal Party, I mean, he's basically, he left 6 months into a six-year term, ratted on the party, and he's created this rival party, and then they're accepting him back after he's, you know, tried to cause all this damage. And I think the Australian Conservatives members, they're going to feel quite gutted as well, because they had a very sort of mediocre message during the campaign. So I think that would sort of, if he rejoined the Liberal Party, Corey Bernardi would sort of be the end of his credibility.
Yeah, definitely. I think he's, well, it was to be expected, I believe. I mean, this is something that I've been predicting for a long time now. A lot of people will see him as a sellout and somebody that is more interested in his job rather than the country. I mean, if someone was really serious in providing a conservative alternative, regardless of how he's performing electorally, he would have stuck to his guns and continued to ride it out rather than escaped from it in time just to save a seat and to be able to continually be represented in Parliament under the Liberals then. I mean, he purposely left the Liberals because they weren't conservative enough, and now he's come out and praised Scott Morrison as somehow some conservative champion that is driving him back to, you know, be happy to be a part of him again.
Well,
I mean,
which we've just, and most people said that he's not.
Yeah, well, I mean, I don't believe he is. I mean, I think most people, I mean, fair enough, he might not be as left-leaning as Turnbull, but he's not far off it. I wouldn't call him a conservative, that's for sure. I wouldn't call him somebody that has revitalised the party to such an extent. I mean, I think he's just trying to save his own job at the end of the day. It's quite simple. And I mean, the reason why the Australian Conservatives failed was because even though they had a particular message to sell, they continued to sell a very soft, mediocre message that has been gone for just so many years. Things have developed since then. I mean, if we're talking 10 years ago, then maybe the Auscons could have had some sort of relevance in the community, but things have changed so drastically. And on the right wing, politics has turned really more nationalist now. So if he wanted to really make a dent in the electorate and go hard and actually be successful, then he should have remained conservative on social issues, but also hit hard and became more of a nationalist sort of figure. And if he had done that, I think he would have been more successful, as we are seeing with people like, Anning, that performed a lot of the Auscons did, considering also One Nation and the Shooters Party. You know, parties that are more nationalist in their approach are performing best amongst the minority of the right-wing parties. And there's a reason for that. I mean, since we've had what's happened in America, and where we're seeing nationalist governments take control in Europe, Brexit, everything pushing that way, the people have woken up, obviously, in those parts of the world. But here, it's still a slow process. But nevertheless, we're seeing a pattern that is what the right wing is now going towards. And you're either going to adopt that position and succeed, or you can continue living in the past and labelling yourself a conservative, which has done very little to conserve anything, because, I mean, that's what they've done. I mean, in the decades that have gone past, what have conservatives conserved? I mean, we've had same-sex marriage, euthanasia now getting brought in. We've had, gender certificates. We've had changes in birth. We've had abortion laws. We've had everything that you can think of unleashed into society. And what have they done to stop it? Absolutely nothing. As soon as they lose a fight on one thing, they just move on to the next thing and go defensive again. Instead of attacking and putting the opposition on the defensive foot and making them cuck out and say, okay, we're not going to go too hard on this. No, they actually go soft. And they always have to be on the other foot, be people that are seen as sensible and more centrist and people that aren't going to go hard. And the public are sick of that because it's not getting us anywhere. If they really wanted to go and achieve something, that's the approach that I think they should have taken. And because they didn't, that's why they failed and other parties on the right had gained.
Well, let's have a look at what's happened in Victoria this week, because this sums up, just how much the Conservatives are on the outer here, where the Unshackled is based, because we had euthanasia introduced today. The voluntary assisted dying bill had passed in November 2017, but there was an 18-month implementation period. I went to the vigil last night against the introduction of euthanasia. You can see that footage on the Unshackled channel now, and there was only one sitting politician who was able to speak, because they were all locked in the parliament, because the Andrews government is trying to have another go at passing their CFA firefighters bill. And Bernie Finn was the only current MP who spoke. And there was also Dr. Rachel Carling Jenkins, who she was elected as a DLP in 2014, then she switched to Australian Conservatives, then left, became an independent, lost her seat in 2018. She made the point that a lot of the MPs who voted against euthanasia lost their seats in 2018, even ones which were considered really safe, and that's shaken a lot of the MPs there. They want to fall into line with these social issues. Daniel Andrews, he sold this euthanasia legislation as the strictest in the world. You had to be suffering from a terminal illness, and you've either had to have 6 months leave, or if it was neurological, 12 months, and you had to be from Victoria, so there was no chance of suicide tourism. So he made it so that it was hard to object to that. Well, you know, it's not going to be like in Belgium and the Netherlands, where, you know, if you're like, there's been cases where if you're feeling depressed or sad, you can take euthanasia, and now children can be euthanized. He sort of, you know, tried to say, no, this is going to be, you know, where it's going to be very tightly controlled.
Yeah, for how long though? That's the thing. I mean, I'm sure that the other countries that had euthanasia to start off with started in one spot similar to Victoria, and then they slowly progressed and changed and made it a lot more or less strict and more lenient. This is the problem. I mean, when you have people that are calling themselves progressive, which are really regressive, their whole philosophy is for constant change. So even though they're brought in euthanasia now, that isn't the end goal. I mean, they're going to continue, that's not enough for them. They're going to continue pushing other things. And that's their basis of their ideology, because as soon as they then say, okay, we've had enough, we're happy now, then they become conservative, because they're basically protecting what is the current now. And for them to be progressive, they have to obviously be pushing for more radical change down the line. That's who they are as people, and they're never going to change that. I think that in the euthanasia situation, regardless of the situation, that the sanctity of life has to be really cherished here. And I think that having such laws in place, regardless of how strict they may be, strips that away from people and basically says to people, well, you know, you're no longer really an important being, so to speak, you know. I mean, it just, like I said, things are going to get worse. It may seem like Daniel Andrews has said to be quite a strict law, but I think it will, the slippery slope starts and it will continue to change over time, I believe.
And the day before euthanasia came in, the Victorian government announced that they were going to, they tried in the last parliament, but it was defeated. They're going to try again to allow self-identification of gender on birth certificates. As long as you can choose any gender you like, as long as it's not obscene or offensive, you don't need to have surgery or anything. Now, in the last parliament, the Liberals voted it down along with the Conservative crossbench, but with this new crossbench in the upper house, there's enough parties who've said they're going to support this legislation the second time around. And even the Liberal leader, Michael O'Brien, said, we want to take a look at it first. He hasn't come out and said, no, this is absurd, like we're not going to support it. And pretty much, like, it's obviously not as insane as in Tasmania, where it makes gender optional on, or you have to opt in to have a gender listed on birth certificate, although an under 18 is allowed to change their gender if they have the support of their parents and doctor. Like, anything that I think, because, you know, like it or not, these lefties, like, you need to know for, like, you know, medical and other reasons, a person's gender at times. Like, that's just the biological reality.
Yeah, I mean, it just seems to me that the left considers feelings to override facts. It's always been the case. I mean, everybody knows there's only two genders, male and female. I mean, they might not like it, but that's too bad. It's been that way ever since the start of time. And, I mean, for them to come out and all of a sudden basically play as if, you know, there's no facts regarding gender at all is ridiculous. One thing that makes me laugh, and something that a lot of people have pointed out on social media, is that when they find a dead body, it's either male or female that they could classify it as. So this is a situation where, you know, that physically, when you're looking at a skeleton or a body physically, it can either be male or female. So it can't have feelings when it's dead, see? I mean, that's basically stating that there is only two genders. But then somebody that's alive and well can come out and say that they're female when they're male, or vice versa. It just doesn't make any sense. And even in this case here, being self-identification, they don't even have to have had surgery. So somebody can totally look like a man and still classify themselves as female. I mean, it was bad enough somebody being a man but looking like a female and saying they were female, but now you don't even have to look like what you say. So I think it's outrageous. I think it's something that people really need to rebel against, this kind of cultural Marxist sort of ideology. And I mean, this is all part of their agendas, but something needs to be done. It really does, because our children and grandchildren, they go to school and they're going to be taught this sort of philosophy here. This is becoming law. So parents might think, oh, well, it's not affecting me, it's not affecting my family because I don't believe in it. But when your kids then go to school and they're taught this kind of belief system because it is the law, then they are going to be infected and indoctrinated. And then when they come home and have a hold a different view to you, then it does become your. So I think it's something that parents really need to rebel against and make an issue of.
Yeah, and Victoria is the home of safe schools, and Daniel Andrews feels that his re-election is in emboldened that. So it's unfortunately the case that it's only those parents who are informed. Like, the trend is these days, parents just turn their children over to the schools and say, you can teach them what they want. I want as little responsibility as possible. And you know, those parents who do, you know, ask questions, they're, you know, the schools find ways to silence them.
Exactly, and that's why they wonder now why there is such a rise in homeschooling. I mean, it's quite obvious why that's the case, because of the state indoctrination. And parents are starting to wake up to this, and they don't want their kids to be exposed to this dangerous ideology that is being pushed. And no matter what school you go to, I mean, fair enough, a Catholic school might not be as bad, but they are still starting to go soft on their belief system and start to be politically correct, and it's only a matter of time. So if you really have strong views and want to teach your children the right thing when it comes to what is right, when it comes to, you know, any particular social issues and the like, you should be sending them to a school. And I think that anybody listening to this now should really consider homeschooling. Yes, you might not be as it might not be a convenience to you, for instance. I mean, you know, it might be a bit of an inconvenience having to go through this, but it, at the end of the day, is worth it, because your child's education and they are raised, I mean, you would do anything for them, and I think that's really more than any inconvenience that could be. I think people need to really see what's best for them and to consider this. I think it's very scary what's out there at schools these days, with safe schools like you mentioned, and many of the other sort of Orwellian kind of programs, the respectful relationships and a couple of the others. It's getting really ridiculous, very scary, and I think that is going to be our future here, that a lot of people are going to have to choose this option.
Now, another big story that we reported on at the Unshackled is that Westpac Banking Corporation, they have decided to close down the account of Patriot activist Blair Cottrell. They said that this was a commercial decision, that they were able to do this because of the account terms and conditions, though we're not able to provide you with any further information about our commercial imperatives. And this was always going to be the next step of the deplatforming movement. I mean, it all started with Facebook and Twitter and YouTube, and then when PayPal and the payment processes start to get involved, then we knew that, you know, it was eventually going to be banks. And, you know, I've speculated what's going to be next. Is it going to be like, if the internet companies, the telcos don't like your politics, they're going to cut off your phone and internet? Are the electricity and water companies, are they going to cut off the supply to your house if they don't like your politics? I mean, how far do you take this?
Well, I think that stuff like that will happen down the road. I mean, that's the way we're heading. If this is absolutely legit, that his bank account has been erased for that particular reason because of them not liking his politics, I mean, I thought, and a lot of people I've spoken to about this issue, it came to the conclusion that, well, it was under our impression that it was illegal. So if it is the case that it's nothing to do with financial mishaps and it's totally to do with his political expression and his association, then you have to really think to yourself, well, what's going to be next down the line? I mean, this is how they sort of try to scare us if we're not towing the line and towing this kind of this view that the state wants to push. They will try and affect us financially because they know that shutting down somebody on a social media site, I mean, that's not going to destroy somebody. I mean, it might be a mishap, it might piss them off, but at the end of the day, when you start attacking their financials and going after them when it comes to money, that is what destroys people and that shuts people down. It'll shut them up. If you want someone to keep quiet, that's exactly the place you go to keep them quiet. And don't get me wrong, some people will ride it out and, you know, and end up being so strongly so strongly dedicated to their values that they would go broke and be in poverty just to be out there saying their opinion. But at the end of the day, most won't. And as soon as you start attacking someone's financials, that's when they start to, you know, I wouldn't say go soft, but they start to back away a little bit, start to get in the background and not too much out there and causing such a such a big public presence and what they would call a nuisance. So I think the exact thing they're doing is it's wise on their behalf, but I think it's very scary that this kind of thing can happen. I mean, if they want to have laws such as the association laws like that, fine. But then in that case, then why is it wrong for a small business owner to refuse a service to somebody that has a different agenda if it's the other side of the fence? Like, for instance, the baking a cake for a gay couple, for instance, if we're to cite an example, then they should have every right to deny that. But of course, it's only one side of the fence that it seems to be legitimately okay. And the corporations, of course, they always tend to get away with this rather than the little guy. So it is very scary news. And I think it's something that we really need to look out for and hope that this doesn't go down that kind of path.
Yeah, it's interesting, the left, they all told us that you had to bake the cake, that you couldn't deny services to people, but now if they consider you an evil fascist, Nazi or whatever, then you're allowed to be denied anything because, well, you're a bad person. Now, Blair suspects his bank account was closed down because that's how he's accepting donations for his appeal against his conviction for the Bendigo mock beheading under Victoria's Racial and Religious Tolerance Act. The appeal trial is set for August in Victoria's County Court. He was originally accepting donations from his supporters on PayPal, but then his PayPal got shut down, so he's giving people his bank details. Now his bank account has been shut down, and apparently the same thing happened to a Bendigo activist, Julie Hoskins, in 2015 when she was trying to challenge the approval of the mosque in Bendigo that the United Patriots Front were protesting at the time, which still hasn't broke ground today. And so it's sort of a coincidence if you're taking on a particular group, but then all of a sudden these avenues you have to sort of, you know, make your case get shut down.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people would come out and suggest, well, you know, under free market circumstances, they've got every right to do that. And if he has any issue, then maybe he should just go and join another bank. And I mean, it's fair enough, easy to say that. But then in that case, what happens if all of the banks start refusing association with him? Then where does he go? That's the problem here. I mean, because since Westpac have chosen that option, when he now goes to try other banks and be able to do business with them, they're going to be under pressure to do the same, especially since one bank has decided to do it already. They're going to be really put under the gun to do it. Otherwise, they're going to be seen as sympathizing with Nazis and so forth, which is what will particularly happen. But in that case, obviously, it's probably best that he chooses a small building society or somebody that would be keen to be able to do business with him. I mean, does that mean that we have to start our own banks now just to be able to, you know, do business without being shut down? I mean, these are all things that have to be considered down the line because we just don't know where we're heading here. It's very scary, you know. I mean, it's one thing for a small business to refuse a service to somebody when there's many, many other hundreds of businesses that person can choose from that they can go elsewhere. But when it comes to banks, I mean, that's a whole different kettle of fish here. I mean, these are major corporations that all tend to have, you know, hidden agendas and go on these SJW rants similar to the AFL and everyone else and Qantas and so forth. And like I said, if one shuts it down, then how many banks are there out there, really? I mean, if you really was to write all the banks down in Australia, there's not that many. It's not like how many, if you were to compare petrol station, bakeries, you know, like if you're comparing banks with other particular businesses, there's definitely not a lot of banks that you could do business with. I mean, you've got your major four and then you've got your other ones that fall under that, your smaller building societies and so forth. But there's only so many options. And if all of them choose to follow Westpac and disallow him to do any services, then where does he go? I mean, not only for funding his particular cause, but his actual life now, not having a bank, he won't be able to get a mortgage on a house. He won't be able to, you know, to work, at least legally or whatever, rather, unless he was doing cash in hand jobs. So how would he survive? You know, this is a survival sort of attack here. It's very, very critical. I mean, a bank is an essential service here. It's not like just not being able to buy something or order something at a bakery, you know.
Yeah. But we have to remember that Westpac and all the other banks, like, they're on board the corporate virtue signaling bandwagon. You know, they're all supportive of, you know, same-sex marriage. So I sort of fear that if he goes to another bank, you know, they'll be like, oh, you know, we don't, you know, want somebody like that banking with us. But I guess the advantage for Blair is that he's a tradie. I mean, he can just, you know, like, yeah, just dealing cash. And of course, we have cryptocurrencies now, and so a lot of you know, online right-wing personalities have been deplatformed by Patreon and PayPal, and the payment processes just accept money through cryptocurrency. And it was interesting today that Facebook has decided to jump on the cryptocurrency bandwagon with their one Libra. I think if I was going to choose a cryptocurrency, I think one authorized by Facebook would be the last one I'd pick.
Yeah, I mean, one thing he can do actually is get an ABN, open a private company, and be able to get funds that way through a company. That way, it doesn't show that it's directly, you know, that it's going to his personal accounts, and he might be able to, you know, swindle things that way. But if he was a sole trader, he obviously wouldn't be able to get away with it because his name would be attached to it. Personally, he wouldn't be able to do it unless he was he had, you know, somebody close to him, like a parent, someone in his family, a partner, for instance, that he could then get money put into their account and then be able to then give it for them to give it to him. But at the end of the day, even though there is ways around this and ways that he would be able to still get on his feet and do what he has to do, they've made it harder for him. They might not have made it impossible, but they've just made his life more difficult. And this is going to frustrate him, and this potentially is going to make him think, like a lot of people would think in this situation, well, is it worth it? Should I just, you know, go quiet and just, you know, do my sort of day-to-day business, get away from the political scene and just like that? And so far he's remained strong and continued to be a political activist on social media and so forth and do all these events. But most people would back down when they're getting attacked financially, even if they're not getting decimated. If their life is becoming harder and there's more hardships involved, more obstacles at play here, a lot of people would go quiet and say, this isn't worth it, we've got to back down. And that's what they want. I mean, they want him to go quietly. They just want him out of the way. Less people out there pushing views that are contrary to their agenda. And obviously, if he doesn't play the game, then they're going to have to go harder on him and, do whatever they can to shut him up. But they'll rather him do it quietly himself, and then at least it's less blood on their hands. But we'll see what the future holds in this situation. It's going to be very interesting to see. And I think it's a warning to all of us out there as to the kind of consequences when we do get involved in political activism, at least on the right side of politics, that this is the kind of thing that we face. And I'm not discouraging anybody from getting involved, because I think it's very important. But what I'm simply doing is warning people that these are the consequences, and just to be mindful, so that way you're aware of the obstacles at play here and what you're getting yourself into.
Yeah, it's going to get a lot more insane, I think, this deplatforming movement. Well, it's getting late here in Melbourne and where you are, Damien, so we'll end the show now. I think we've done these late Wednesday ones a couple of weeks now. I think we'll probably aim for an earlier time next week, go back to probably our usual 7 o'clock, whether it be live or premiere.
Yeah, that sounds great, Tim, and thanks for having me on, mate.
And, of course, tomorrow night is the Uncuckables at 8:30 p.m. Australian Eastern Standard Time. It'll be myself, David Hiscock, editor of XYZ, and for his making his Uncuckables debut, Richard Wollstonecroft from the report from Tiger Mountain, and also the Melbourne Underground Film Festival. My Facebook ban has just finished right now, so I'll be back on Facebook for now. The YouTube ad Vocalypse, we're not sure how that's affecting us, but we have known that our subscriber count has not grown. The problem is, though, that the YouTube alternative BitChute is blocked by most Australian ISPs, but we are there. If you use a VPN, we're at bitchute.com/channel/theunshackled, and of course we are on free speech social media, gab.ai/theunshackled, minds.com/the_unshackled, and also MeWe at MeWe.com/p/theunshackled, and of course our growing Telegram channel, which is at t.me/theunshackled. A reminder, we have our new membership program for you to support the work of The Unshackled. That's at theunshackled.net/membership. We also have a new donation facilitation place. It's at theunshackled.net/donate. And of course, we have our Patreon and PayPal link, as for always. So make sure that if you want us to keep producing what we do, that you support our work. So thanks once again for your company, and I will see you next show.
Thanks for tuning in to The Unshackled Waves. Please visit theunshackledwaves.net for all the ways to subscribe and follow the show. Don't forget to pick up your free ebook at theunshackledbattlefield.net, and keep checking out theunshackled.net for all the latest news and commentaries.